What's up, everybody? This week I'm joined by Sarah as we sit down to talk about one of the greatest albums ever written of all time, R.E.M.'s Automatic for the People. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the 90s Podcast right here on the Because We Network. Hope you're doing well today, and welcome to the smooth sounds of JCFM. How are you doing this evening?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Excuse me. I have a little bit of a frog in my throat, so that'll be gone here in a few seconds. Sarah, how are you doing this evening?
I am fabulous. I feel like you're about to ask if I want any sweaty balls.
Sweaty balls. Do you have any Grey Poupon?
No. All right.
So how are you doing?
I am fabulous. How are you, dear?
I'm doing good. I know we're recording these a little bit far in advance, but today has been a very interesting day.
Today's been... Yeah.
Some dude landed on the moon. It's landed a rocket on the moon today.
Yeah, they put a rover on the moon today.
Yes.
Yep.
And Stingray Jesus was born.
Yes.
So... And I know one of us is going to get engulfed in the trap that is the 50-episode thing on TikTok.
Why I married my ex, yeah.
Oh, my word.
So yeah.
It's been...
Somebody's going to be me. It's going to be me. But we're not here to talk about any of that today.
No,
we are not here to talk about the album that was number 2 on the Billboard charts and number 1 in the UK charts, released in October of 1992. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, we are here to talk about R.E.M.'s Automatic for the People.
I like that. That's a really, really good introduction you did for it, though.
I know, right?
It's fantastic.
Isn't it, though?
Yes. Automatic for the People by R.E.M., the second R.E.M. album we've covered here on the Because We're Movies podcast, on the 90s podcast, I should say. And it's been a couple of years since we did New Adventures in Hi-Fi.
Yes. So
this is a more traditional album.
Yes.
But if you want to listen to our review of New Adventures in Hi-Fi, which is one of Sarah's favorite R.E.M. albums.
It absolutely is.
Go check it out in the archive, season 7.
And then if you go in the archive, you'll see that it's been revamped a little bit.
Yes, I actually took the time to... I couldn't edit the dang thing because of our website provider, so I fixed it.
He fisted it.
I made it work well. Now I got to do the other pages to make them work well.
Bippity boppity boot it. Yes.
Boot it?
Yeah. You reboot it.
I rebooted. I don't know.
All right, everybody. Enough about all of that. We are here to talk about R.E.M.'s Automatic for the People.
Yes.
So, you know, picture it. Sicily. Or Georgia.
Athens.
Georgia. 1992. At this point, R.E.M. were not a touring band. Between 89 and 95, they were strictly a studio band.
So they were pulling little Beatles stuff on there.
And also, this is one of the reasons why in the late 90s and the early 2000s, whenever they would do shows or perform, Stipe would have to have lyric sheets.
Because he'd forgotten.
Yeah, because if you only record something...
You don't need to memorize it.
Right.
So you just need to record it once and throw it away.
Then you're done, yes.
Yeah. No, they decided to, you know, become a studio band. I mean, they'd been touring for years, though, nonstop at that point.
Yeah, doing the college circuits.
When they were on the IRS label.
Mm-hmm.
Before they got signed up by a major label back at their previous album, Out of Time.
Yes.
Out of Time is the R.E.M. album that put them on the map in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Featuring songs like Shiny Happy People and Losing My Religion.
Yes.
And would you say that R.E.M. are the best band to come out of Georgia?
It's a toss-up between them and the B-52s. And even they would say it's the same.
Well, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Because the B-52s are... epic.
Yes, they are. B-52s are awesome. So once the media tours and the videos and the TV performances and everything was finished for Out of Time, they started making demos for Automatic for the People.
As one does, yes.
So how does R.E.M. work?
Well, when they record, the band, minus Stipe, would meet for 3 weeks out of the month to rehearse, write new instrumental tracks, etc. So you've basically got Peter Buck, Mike Mills, and Bill Berry off to their side in their little band cave, you know, trading their instruments or instruments around, excuse me, during these sessions, trying out, you know, new patterns with organs and mandolins and pianos to create new sounds, something fresh.
See, what they wanted, right, is they wanted a more edgier, rockier sound. They wanted to go back to their roots, so to speak. And
that did not happen.
That did not happen. Song. They recorded 30 demos.
Mm-hmm.
Only six made that kind of. So 24 songs off the mark.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but once they have all of these, you know, instrumentals, then they give them over to Stipe. I imagine, like, you know, he's sitting on sort of throne or whatever, and the demo reels are like on a, because back then it was actual tape. So they're like on a velvet cushion that is sort of like,
this
Hercules. Yes. So, yeah. But in early 92, they gave everything to Stipe, who said that the music was very mid-tempo. It was pretty freaking weird. More acoustic, more organ bass, less drums.
He said in an interview with Rolling Stone.
Yes. And so then Stipe went and wrote the lyrics to the songs. And then the band retreated to Kingsway Studios in my home state of New Orleans to write the final set of demos.
Of course, the state is Louisiana. The city's New Orleans. She's looking daggers through me, everybody. She wants to kill me.
Y'all knew what I meant. Y'all, I'm tired. It has been a day. It has been a day.
It has been a day. Even the days had a day.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
But, so what they did is they took the recordings that Stipe wrote lyrics to Scutlet and then started recording more organ and finished around about July 1992.
Right.
And you know, even though they were trying to make a more rockier and a more positive themed album, the album themes are more or less death and mourning.
Ah.
Peter Buck added that a lot of it was mourning their youth, was mourning their youth by turning 30. Y'all, everybody who's appeared on this podcast this season is over 40. So.
Well, okay, but also, early Gen X aged faster.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but 30 is nothing. 30 is fine.
40 is nothing.
40 is absolutely nothing. So.
It's 41 that's going to be the issue. Oh. I can see it right now.
Yeah. Okay. But the title for the album was borrowed from a slogan from a soul food restaurant in Athens, Georgia, where the band hails from. And it's also one of the few REM albums where Stipe clearly enunciates his lyrics.
Yeah. I mean, he did a good job, you know, just really, really speaking out. Now, when I first heard REM, I was a wee little boy when this album came out. I was 8 when this album came out. And listening to the Sidewinder Sleep Tonight, I thought they were Irish at first.
Ah, yeah.
Because of the way he sings the song. And then I hear they were from Athens. It's like, oh, they're Greek. So, because, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, over here we like to be fancy in our country. And I don't mean like in the US of A, I mean like the South. That's why you've got like Paris, Texas. Like you could go on a whole European tour just in Texas.
London, Texas, Paris, Texas. Yes. Yeah.
And they're all like little stick towns. You know, there's nothing to them.
Maybe a Waffle House and a Dollar General.
Maybe. You know, Montana only has one Dollar General in the entire state, and Wyoming has 10.
Well, because there's only like 5 people in Montana and 50 people
there in... There are cities in my state that have 100 people and 3 Dollar Generals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Explain that.
How many Dollar Generals have we got around us?
I don't understand.
And they're always stacking the shelves, too. I noticed that.
Right? All right. So, at this point, who was R.E.M.? R.E.M. was comprised of Bill Berry, who...
Let me explain. They traded instruments in the studio, right? But Bill Berry's main was the drums and the percussion. He also played keyboards, bass, backing vocals, and the melodica, which is that one you blow into and play keys.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I can't word today, y'all.
Can't word. Peter Burke with his electric and acoustic guitars, mandolin. He played the bass guitar and the bouzouki, which is like a Greek kind of stringed instrument, like a guitar. It's an ethnic instrument like a banjo.
Yeah, it's like a Greek version of a banjo, meaning a sitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have Mike Mills, who played bass guitar, piano, keyboards, accordion, backing vocals, and the double bass.
Gotta love a good double bass.
Yes. And, of course...
the legend himself.
Yes. The best godfather in the world.
Michael Stipe. Lead vocals. Yes. And basically lyric writing.
Yes.
And that's an important job. I mean, a lot of people would say, well, he doesn't play anything, but he wrote the lyrics. So it's his voice is the instrument.
And anybody who doesn't believe...
And his voice and his intellect.
Right. Anybody who doesn't believe that there's power in lyrics, look at any... performance of Old No Doubt, or look at the Fleetwood Mac MTV special from the 90s. And there you have women who, oh, they just write the lyrics. Of course, you know, Stevie Nicks also played guitar, but that's not the point.
Right.
You know, they just write the lyrics. Yes. They write lyrics that are so powerful, they get to sing them about how awful the other person is right in front of them, and they have to take it.
Yes.
Lyrics can be very, very powerful.
Lyrics are the most important thing of a song, which is weird because not many people pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. They only pay attention to, say, certain bits like the choruses. Mm-hmm. Like the verses, you know, they don't... There's a guy who I follow on TikTok who is listening to songs from his childhood, songs from the 90s, and actually listening to the lyrics.
Right.
And, like, he's like, oh, I can't play my kids this.
Right, yeah.
And, like, you know, he was bebopping away in 97 to, mm-hmm. you know, Third Eye Blind.
Mm-hmm.
And the one he did yesterday that I saw was Hanson, Umbop.
What's wrong with Umbop?
You'd have to watch it.
I mean, the drummer was 11. What the heck is wrong?
Does it mean that the lyric writer was 11?
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah.
So back to our band R.E.M. here.
As we mentioned, Michael Stipe wrote all the lyrics to these songs. We're going to go track by track. Sorry if it seems like I'm talking over you. My apologies.
You're good.
All songs written by Michael Stipe, Bill Berry, Mike Mills, Peter Buck. So the R.E.M. wrote all the songs. All the meanings of the songs are from official transcripts of the band, from interviews, mm-hmm. and the lyric sheet and the cover notes. All basic fan theories.
Yes.
So, Sarah, why don't you kick us off with what's going on?
The first song on the album is Drive, which is an homage to David Essex's Rock On, especially the glam production style of the early 70s. And also, you know, mainly the lyrics, Hey Kids, Rock and Roll, was shared by both songs.
Nobody tells you where to go, baby.
And it also pays homage to Queen and Pylon. It has an orchestral backing of a simple acoustic guitar, bass, and minimal drums. And there's been some conflicting meaning on the song from R.E.M.'s musicians.
Yeah, I mean, even in the same interview,
right?
I got these quotes from. Mike Mills said, Drive is telling kids just take charge of their own lives,
mm-hmm.
he said in Melody Maker in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Buck said, quote, It is a subtle political thing. Michael specifically mentions the term bushwhacked, but if you want to take it like Stan, that's cool too. You like to think that you can appreciate these songs on any level you want to. I have a lot of records, and when I listen to them, I'm just doing the dishes like Ride Records. I really like Ride a lot, and I have no idea what the songs are about, and I really don't care. I don't even worry about it. The lyrics are the last thing I listen to unless someone is hitting me over the head with it. So, yeah, I mean, he just kind of made the point I made just a minute ago, same point. lyrics are usually the last thing you listen to. It's usually the tune and the melody, and then the lyrics kind of fit in, like...
Right.
Yeah, you know.
Uh-huh. It's a staple of their live sets. And you're pretty fond of the arrangement of the
song, right? I love
this song.
I really do. I think it's, you know, the orchestral backing, the drums,
mm-hmm.
just the lack of chorus.
Right.
I love a good chorus. Everybody knows that. I love a good chorus. But I also love a song without a chorus.
Right.
That sounds pretty epic.
This is true.
So.
The next song on the album is Try Not to Breathe.
Next on the disc. I love it.
I know, right? The title of this song came after a demo session with the band. Peter Buck was breathing too hard at a microphone meant for his guitar and told the engineer, John Keane, that he would do another take and would try not to breathe.
Yeah, because the last...
Uh-huh.
Sound like Hey Arnold back here.
The lyrics are inspired by the death of Michael Stipe's grandmother, which is very sad. The song is marveled by critics as they cannot believe a 30-year-old could write about an elderly woman so beautifully. The music has a country feel to it, but sounds like an R.E.M. song as well at the same time.
R.E.M. in this era were, I mean, they were using country instruments, mm-hmm. you know, mandolins and acoustic guitars,
right.
that late 80s, early 90s country.
Right.
Yeah, I've done live sound a lot where you've plugged a guitar up in front of somebody and you can hear them breathe. You mm-hmm. can hear, there was one guy who I mic'd his guitar up and he moved his guitar and you could hear his stomach growling the whole thing through the PA system.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yuck a do.
Yes. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, this was a hard song to listen to. It is a hard song to listen to. And Michael Stipe, you know, they said, how can a 30-year-old write an elderly woman so beautifully? Well, that's a little patronizing.
A little bit.
Because, like, you can write roles mm-hmm. in movies
right.
for elderly people that yes. come off real, real well in your 30s and late 20s mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I just think that was a little head pat to me.
It was. It was very just condescending. Extremely condescending.
But it's a good song.
Yes.
The next song that we're talking about is The Sidewinder Sleeps the Night.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
this is the one you mentioned earlier,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Everybody knows The Lion Sleeps the Night.
Mm-hmm.
And part of them being able to use elements of the original was they'd had to cover The Lion Sleeps the Night at some point during their career. And I think right. they did it as a B-side to one of the songs on this album. I think they did it as a B-side to The Sidewinder Sleeps the Night, actually.
Huh.
I mentioned earlier that because of this song, I thought R.E.M. were Irish. Because when he sings Calling to Wake You Up, Calling to Wake You Up. Uh-huh. I mean, he sounds like he's
yeah.
Bono's best man, you know.
I love that.
But the weird thing about this is that this, in 2010, a survey called This Was the Most Misheard Lyric in UK History. Sarah, for a point, what was the lyric that everybody in the UK thought they heard?
Excuse me while I kiss the sky?
Nope, that was Jimi Hendrix track.
Yeah, sorry, my bad.
One of my favorite websites.
Uh-huh.
It was actually misheard as Calling Jamaica. Instead of Calling to Wake You Up.
Oh, I thought you meant like the most one in like...
Oh, the most one. No, this one is mm. in the UK. Now, for those of you out there who don't know what Kiss the Sky is, Sarah, can you elaborate on that one? Because there's a whole website out there.
Yes. Jimi Hendrix has a song where what he actually sings is, excuse me, while I kiss the sky. But what you hear, or what most people have heard, is kiss this guy. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but talking about lyrics have had fans and the band questioning their meaning for a long time. Mike Mills, back in the Melody Maker article from 92, said it's about somebody that doesn't have a place to stay. Part of it is also about what man can do that machines can't. The rest of it, I don't have any idea what it's about.
So that's a fair point. I mean, it's just one of those mm-hmm. word vomit songs,
yes.
lyrically. Do you know what a sidewinder is?
It's a type of phone which the narrator of the song seems to try and avoid.
Yes.
Yes. It's also a species of rattlesnake and an air pump.
Now, children, the type of phone that we're talking about, we're not yes. talking about a rotary phone where no. you've got to dial the number.
No, we're talking about the rotary phone's grandfather. Basically, if you've seen any old television shows, like think the Andy Griffith Show back in the day.
So, old Looney Tunes,
yes.
Tom and Jerry.
Yes. So when you've got like the big wooden box on the wall and it's got like the little cone thing that you speak into, and it's one thing in the ear and on a string, but you speak into the actual box, that is a sidewinder.
And it's also a type of rattlesnake, which...
Yeah.
Now, snakes.
Right?
Just, I hate snakes.
Now, the next song is one of two of the best known songs on the album.
Yeah, I mean, you have albums that have the song on there. This is one of those rare albums that has two of the songs on there.
Right, right.
So this is the first one that we're going to talk about. We'll talk about the second one later.
Yes, so this one is Everybody Hurts,
yes.
which was originally brought to the band by the drummer, Bill Berry, who says, or Peter Buck said in a Facebook interview for 2011, that Everybody Hurts is similar to The Man in the Moon. Bill brought it in, and it was a one-minute long country and western song. It didn't have a chorus or a bridge. It had a verse. It kind of went around and around, and he was strumming it. We went through about four different ideas and how to approach it, and eventually came to that Stax, Otis Redding, Pain in My Heart kind of vibe. I'm not sure if Michael would have copped that reference, but to a lot of our fans, it was a Staxy type thing. It took us forever to figure out the arrangement and who was going to play what. And then Bill ended up not playing on the original track at all. It was me and Mike and a drum machine. And then we were all overdubbed.
Imagine writing a song and then not playing it.
Imagine writing that song and then not even recording it.
No.
Like, that's gotta suck.
I mean, I've heard of people who've done that. They've written a song and then they just didn't record their part because, oh, the rest of the parts sound great. But he's the drummer. They replaced the drummer with the drum machine.
Ooh. So the lyrics of the song are straightforward, as the song was aimed for teenagers.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought that it was, you know, just not a lament, but I don't know what to call it. Because it's not a lament and it's not a plea. It's kind of
a declaration, sort of. Yeah.
It's almost defiant.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. And I love songs that are defiant. I really do. And I'm not talking about, you know, Rage Against the Machine kind of defiant. Right. I'm talking about emotionally defiant.
Right.
You know?
But the song features a string arrangement as well as simple guitar playing. Stipe's vocals are the most haunting but sympathetic, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. What I meant by that was, you know, it's very, very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
But you can feel the sympathy coming out of them at the same time.
Right.
I guess a lyric you can compare it to, mm-hmm. ironically, mm-hmm. is Nothing Compares to You.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got that same vibe. Right. The lyrics do. His singing does.
Yeah. The song was used by the UK on the Samaritan's Hotline, to highlight suicide in young men. It was also covered as a charity single to raise money for the victims of the 2010 Haitian earthquake. But if you're familiar with the video, it's very iconic. It depicts people in a traffic jam with their thoughts overlaid on the screen, sort of a precursor to pop-up video. Eventually, other people stuck in the jam will get up out of their cars and walk away. They're just done sitting with all of that hurt and grief and whatnot. And so we're just going to get up and leave it.
Yeah.
We're done. So, and it's inspired by Nazareth's cover of Love Hurts.
I didn't know that.
Well, now,
that was a movie that had a similar plot line,
mm-hmm.
Starring Michael Douglas, called Falling Down, where he gets caught up in a traffic jam,
mm-hmm.
and at that point loses every last ounce of his sanity that he had left, which, if as the film goes on, you realize he didn't have that much sanity to begin with.
Right.
But, he robs a convenience store for 25 cents.
Fabulous.
Because he needs money for the phone and nothing in there would cost more, would be able to give him change for 25 cents. He holds up a McDonald's because he's 2 minutes late for breakfast.
Oh, geez.
And the point of it is he's trying to get to his daughter's birthday. Of course, you find out that his wife has a super restraining order on him where he's not allowed to have any contact with anybody ever. It's a really good movie. It's a thriller. It's one of those, it's one of those cops has 2 days left till retirement movies. You know. I love the video to this song. I really do. It's very, very good. Now, a band who does a real, real good Everybody Hurts, The Corrs. They had a spurious MTV Unplugged, and I say that because they're not the most rockiest band in the world. That, you know, Alice in Chains, MTV Unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
You need something like that. Nirvana, MTV Unplugged. The Corrs,
They were already unplugged.
They, you know, but they did a real, real good version of Everybody Hurts on that album. Real, real good. A lot of people called it sacrilege when they first announced it, but then when they heard it, sung by a young Irish woman.
Very cool.
Very cool. So, this song disappointed me, the next song on the album.
Yes.
It's called New Orleans Instrumental Number 1.
Mm-hmm.
Now, until I researched, I did not realize that the album was recorded in part
in New Orleans. Right.
So, this was probably an instrumental that they wrote in New Orleans.
Right.
And the first one that they did.
Right.
So they called this track New Orleans Instrumental Number 1. It sounds nothing like you'd hear from New Orleans, though.
Yeah.
So that's why I was disappointed with it, because
there's no jazz funeral band type thing going on here. No.
It's just a dreary keyboard a bass that sounds like an E-bow, which is an Aryan trademark. You know, I don't know. It didn't slap for me, as the kids would say.
Okay. Well, the next song on the album is called Sweetness Follows, which is another song about death and grieving. It seems to tap into the fear of losing a close family member, specifically a mother or father. And Peter Buck is the only member of R.E.M. to play on the track. It has no bass, no drums, just keyboard and guitar, and a cello played through an amp.
Which is sounds gnarly.
Right. It was not an immediate hit, but it was picked up by Cameron Crowe and used in the 1999 movie Vanilla Sky.
Yes. I mean, this song didn't stand out to me at all.
Right.
I guess my New Orleans instrumental number one disdain...
It carried over.
Kind of carried over. Not in a I don't like this track kind of way, but
right.
I needed a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
And I don't know much about this track. I've listened to this album four times in the last couple of days to prepare for this episode.
And it doesn't stick out
And it's
enough.
Not registering right. with me right now.
And that's okay. But the next song might. That is Monty Got a Raw Deal. The main riff of the song is played on the bouzouki and not a guitar, which is the instrument that we talked about earlier.
Peter Buck, man, he had this thing that he was a guitar player who did not want to be a guitar player anymore. So he the banjo, the mandolin, the bouzouki. I'm sure he got a sitar out at some point. That that guitar that you see in mariachi bands with right. eight strings.
Right.
Anything but an electric guitar he wanted to play.
Well, the song itself was demoed in Athens and then recorded in New Orleans. But Peter doesn't remember anything about the recording of this.
No, not at all.
Right. But it's rumored to be about a Montgomery Monty Clift. Clift was, we found out after he passed, a closeted gay actor who, after his car crash that he was in left and misfigured, he descended into loneliness, poor guy.
Yeah, I mean, this was a 50s actor, so yeah. he was a heartthrob in the 50s.
Yeah.
And that him being gay would not have been acceptable.
No.
He would have been blacklisted quicker than the people who were done for communism.
Right.
You know, but there's a lot of parallels between Stipe and Clift.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because at the time, Stipe was still very much closeted as well.
Yes. So. Very much closeted.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So.
Wow.
All right. The next song on the album is Ignoreland. And this is more traditional rock song. Sounded mm-hmm. like the mid-80s
right.
roots. And it's got a political undertone to it. Song talking about the conditions in the U.S. under the presidential regimes of the previous three presidents, which have been Carter, Reagan, and Bush.
Mm-hmm.
But mainly against Reagan and Bush, because Mike Mills said in 92, Michael's railing against Republican politics. The opening line is, these stole all the power from the victims as for them years. Reckon all the change is virtuous and true. And the last verse is really great. I know that this is vitriol, no solution, spleen venting, but I feel bad I haven't screamed. Don't you? I mean, it's really, really great, said Mike Mills. I mean, you can understand that. I mean, there was a lot of things that a lot of people can point towards mm-hmm. that are wrong today that you can point towards Reagan for.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things you can point towards that Bush Sr. for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Les Carter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Carter's a great man.
Yeah.
The other two not necessarily were known for their
right.
humility.
Right.
You know. But Michael Stipe's vocals were recorded through an amp for this one.
Okay.
So, kind of like Nirvana Unplugged with the acoustic guitar through the amp.
Right.
It was more along the lines to give him some comfort as he was recording. Also, the song's played in Neil Young tuning. Now, what that means for non-guitar players in there is the top and the bottom strings were detuned to the next note down.
Oh, okay.
So, instead of being in E...
Right.
They've dropped down to D. There's huh. examples of songs like that, not just Neil Young. Everlong, for example, is probably one of the most famous examples of that guitar tuning.
Okay.
Interestingly, the band didn't like this song. They were unhappy with the mix. They were unhappy with how it sounded. They were unhappy with the lyrics. They were unhappy with everything about it and did not play this song until their final tour 16 years after the fact.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was... A lot of people ignored Ignoreland.
Ba-dum-bum. The irony is strong in
this
one.
The irony is strong in that one.
Next, you have Star Me Kitten, which, as you could probably imagine, was originally titled F Me Kitten. They changed it to the star after the title would have been censored.
Yes, it would have been four stars. So yes. It still would have been Star Me Kitten.
Yes. So apparently, the title was suggested by Meg Ryan. The song suggests a romance, but is actually about a failed long-term relationship. You, me, we used to be on fire. That's very poignant.
Yes.
The use of kitten is even half-hearted. The arrangement is just a simple guitar, bass, and a cymbal.
Yeah, this is another one that didn't jump out to me.
Right.
And I'm having a hard time remembering what it was.
Right.
But
the next two songs.
Next three songs, actually. We're almost mm-hmm. at the end of the album. So let's talk about the next song on the album and why it is as great as it is.
Okay. The next song on the album is Man on the Moon.
Yes.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Do you know this song's about Andy Kaufman?
Really?
Yes.
So the song itself deals with less a story and more a collection of pop culture references. So you've got a bunch of tame conspiracy theories like the moon landing and Elvis and Kaufman both being alive. And there are references to Andy Kaufman's wrestling career there.
And I've gone through the lyrics and I can't find this, but for some reason I've got Jerry Lawler written down.
Yeah.
I guess that's because where Andy Kaufman wrestled as opposed to who he wrestled.
Yeah.
But there's nothing in the song about Jerry Lawler, but it does talk about Fred Blair seeing a breakfast kiss.
Yeah. Okay.
And it referenced Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone wrestling again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interesting fact about that. A lot of people thought that Andy Kaufman's time wrestling ended after he got his behind handed to him on Letterman show. He actually wrestled for another 18 months after that.
Yeah.
There was one story that Jerry Lawler likes to tell,
mm-hmm.
and he gave Kaufman his move, the pile driver, which drops you on his head, for those who are not wrestling fans.
Right.
And Andy Kaufman's just laying in the ring, and everybody's getting worried, and the referee walks over to check on him, and the referee walks back to Jerry Lawler, and the referee goes, "Andy would like an ambulance." And Lola's like, "I can't afford an ambulance. That's $500. Walk back over to Andy Kaufman. Referee whispered what Lola said. Because right. Lola was the guy who ran the wrestling show at right. that point. And Andy Kaufman got back, whispered something to the referee. And the referee said, "He'll pay for the fucking ambulance. Just get an ambulance out here." He wasn't hurt. He just dedicated to the show.
Right. That is hysterical. But the song was recorded many months before the lyrics were recorded.
Yeah.
Stipe had a hard time coming up with lyrics that he felt were okay. Originally, it demanded to be it was almost originally another instrumental.
Which, playing this song, look, I've played this song humming it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they chopped like half of it or two-thirds
right.
of it.
Right.
A 37-second instrumental of what the tune is without the lyrics. Even if you don't pay attention to the lyrics and don't know the lyrics.
Right.
It would have dragged so long.
Mm-hmm. Well, eventually he was walking around Seattle and listening to the mixed music and decided to write about Kaufman. And then it was recorded, mixed, and mastered on the last day of sessions.
So talk about squeaky bum tom.
Right. And the use of was a nod and tribute to Stipe's long-term friend, Kurt Cobain.
Yes.
Yes. And it inspired the biopic of Andy Kaufman, which would go on with the same name years later and would star Courtney Love.
And Jim Carrey.
So, yes.
Two people who we've talked about a lot on this podcast.
Yes.
One of them is the patron saint, and the other one is the weird uncle, I guess you right. would call it.
And then, again, Stipe is just the godfather of them all, because yes. Stipe is Frances Bean Cobain's godfather.
Yes.
And actually just officiated her wedding to Tony Hawk's son. The 90s called. It wants everyone back.
Now, this was like the worldwide smash hit.
Yes.
Everybody Hurts was a worldwide smash hit, too, but this one even surpassed that.
Right.
And, I mean, this right here is probably 9 days out of 10 my favorite R.E.M. song. The 10th day my favorite R.E.M. song is
the other one for the movie.
Yes.
Yes.
So this song means a lot to me. We used to play this in the band that I was in.
Yeah.
And I love this song. I think it's fantastic. It's got a great arrangement. The fact that it was almost an instrumental, the fact that the lyrics were written in the final day of session, that is blew my mind.
Right.
I mean, this is just a all to all a world-class song.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
I mean, you can't argue with that.
No, not at all. Next, you have Night Swimming, which is a piano-based song. It's just a piano and an oboe.
You only hear the oboe... No, you hear the oboe at the end of the song. Never mind. Ignore me.
Yeah, no, you're good. The song took a long time to get lyrics. Aside from Man on the Moon, it was the first to be recorded and the last to get lyrics.
So what I wrote down, that sounds like it doesn't make sense, but I know what I meant when I wrote that down.
Yeah, no, it took a long time to get the lyrics made, is what you meant.
And it was the last song to get lyrics aside from Man on the Moon.
Right. So it is considered by a lot to be one of R.E.M.'s finest songs. Yes. Stipe considers this one of his best lyrical compositions.
Yes.
And of course, his lyrics talk about youth, innocence, and the passing of time.
Yeah, this song got me in trouble back in the day on old Live Journal. I did not put this under a cut.
You gotta hide it. I wrote
a dissertation on it for like a better term.
You didn't hide it, and it's too long.
And people got mad at me for it. I didn't know. I'd been on the site like a month at that point.
Oh no!
And nobody had taught me anything. I was learning the hard way. So,
well, the last song on the album was "Find the River," which the song talks about the metaphorical journey of life. John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin arranged the strings on the song with a simple guitar, bass, piano, and a drum setup. Yes.
Yeah. It's a good song, right? I'm not going to doubt it. It's a real good song.
It's
and
a good finisher.
I disagree. And let me explain why, okay? A lot of the albums I've listened to in the past, and even R.E.M. have got a bad habit about doing this, I think, and this is not a knock on R.E.M., but this is something that they've been known to do.
Right.
The natural end to an if they wanted this song on the album, they should have put it in a different spot on the album, because Night Swimming was the perfect end to the album as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
So R.E.M. have got this bad habit of putting the song that should finish the album as next to last track, and then having one more track.
I got that.
But it's a perfectly fine way to end the album. It's a good song. I love the arrangement to it. It's just it's a come down.
Right.
After Night Swimming is very very happy.
Right.
Which is unusual for this album, because this is a very emotional album.
Yes, it is. Yes, it
is. So, Sarah, what do you think about it?
I love this album. I would give it either an 8.5 or a 9.
Okay.
So,
I give it an 8.
Okay.
It's a very, very emotional album. But
ooh,
you can listen to certain songs that are 2 minutes long.
Right.
And it feels like 10 seconds.
There
are some songs you can listen to. For example, one of my favorite songs is "All Around the World" by Oasis, and that's 10 minutes long, and it only feels like 5. Right. With this album, you feel every minute of every song.
Right.
And every second of every song. So it I don't say it drags, but you have to be Tom invested into it. You can't just use it as a Tom sync.
Yeah.
Everybody Hurts and Man on the Moon. For an album to have two songs like that is phenomenal.
And then when you throw in Night Swimming in there too. Yeah.
Night Swimming is a distant third.
Oh yeah. But it's damn
good. And then
you
got Drive too. Drive is a fantastic song as well.
Oh, yeah.
I remember watching an R.E.M. DVD of a gig they did in Germany, and they did Drive and Country Feedback back to back, and everybody was just like, you know. There are emotions on display, but that just makes it a masterpiece.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's it, you know. I mean, the band, you know, what happened next? Well, the band followed up with Monster.
Right.
Where they finally got the lyric style and energy shift that they'd been looking for.
Yeah.
And that was one of R.E.M.'s two morning albums.
Mm.
Where they New Adventures in Hi-Fi was an extension to that, because right. during this time period, two of Michael Stipe's closest friends died, River Phoenix and Kurt Cobain. And so he was he wrote lyrics based on his emotions to those right. deaths. Like in one of the songs in New Adventures in Hi-Fi, it's a letter to River Phoenix.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Let Me In was played with Kurt Cobain's instruments.
Yeah.
You know, which were donated to, which...
were loaned out.
Which were loaned out, but I see a flaw, just a slight flaw. Kurt Cobain was left-handed, Peter Buck's right-handed.
Just because he was left-handed, he played left-handed guitar?
No, Peter Buck played right-handed guitar.
Okay, I'm talking about Kurt.
Kurt played left-handed guitar.
Okay. I don't know. Kurt might have had some right-handed guitars.
Maybe.
I mean, Noel does.
Well, Noel's left-handed.
Yes, but all he plays is right-handed guitar.
True. Same with Greg.
Yeah.
The Holodex has three left-handed members.
Huh. I'll be damned.
Yeah.
Okay.
The only one is Ben, who plays guitar. So. This album's considered one of the greatest albums of all time, and it is usually on those lists of, you know... it's usually in the top 20 of albums you must listen to before you die, in the top 500 albums of all time, and
yes, all that stuff. Very much deservedly.
So, that's it. It's a little short this week, but we got through it.
Yes.
Actually, you know what? This is about the length of time that the album takes. So go find it on Spotify or whatever wherever you listen to music these days. I'll go buy the vinyl.
Ooh, yes. Yeah, nothing beats that warm vinyl sound.
I've got to hook my turntable up at some point. I've got to find a space for it. I've got no space for it anywhere. Sarah, it's been good to have you on.
Thank you.
I'll be back here in a couple of minutes. Sarah will be back next week, and I'll tell you what we'll be talking about next week here in just a moment.
Ooh, it's a mystery.
It's a mystery. Yes, it is. I'll be back here in a second. My sincere thank you once again to Sarah Connolly for her taking the time out of her busy day and coming out here and talking about one of the greatest albums of all time. I really, really appreciate her. She will be back on the show later on in the season. How later on? Well, you only have to wait 7 days to hear her again. Yes, she's going to be on next week's episode. We're going to switch to a movie review this time, and we're going to be talking about one of the funniest parody movies of all time. Set in space, with a great cast... we're talking about Galaxy Quest, one of my favorite movies of all time. It has to be said, I love that movie. I will get to the reasons why I love that movie next week. I want you to join in and listen to us, too. So that's, yeah, cliffhanger. Nice. I don't know what I'm talking about. But also we have next week, next Sunday, we are continuing the Dog Ate My Homework series of Pokemon Red. Yes. So I thank everybody who's taking the time out of their Sundays to watch the Pokemon series. I know that I can be wishy-washy with my time. Sometimes I'm on there for 2 hours, sometimes I'm on there for an hour. Just depends where the natural stopping point is. And I want everybody who has listened to today's episode of the podcast to go back and watch today's episode of the Dog Ate My Homework stream over on our YouTube channel. Yes, we're going to be showing next Sunday as well. Join us at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 hours before we launch this podcast, and it'll give you something to do this afternoon. You can on a Sunday afternoon, you can spend time with us. We will be much appreciative of that. And that really is it. I don't really have anything to talk about. It's been a strange old week, and just wanted to get this episode out there and get it for your listening pleasure. I know this week was a little short compared to what we normally release, but that's just sometimes how the conversation flows. So, but I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. We appreciate you. If you want to have more Because Maybe Network goodness, go to becausemaybenetwork.com. That's where you'll find every podcast, every video, every video game series that we've done, every extra podcast, every Right Here Right Now podcast, everything that we've ever done ever. Go check it out, becausewemenetwork.com. If you're on social media, like our pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Okay, I'm calling it Twitter still. You can't make me call it X. I'm not going to. And then, of course, if you're listening to this and stumble across this on something that's not where you usually listen to podcasts, we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Podbean, or Amazon Music, okay? And that is it. So everybody take it easy, okay? And I will see you next week. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. Say your prayers, eat your vitamins, and all that nonsense, and we'll see you next time. Take it easy, everybody. Bye.